Send your wildlife recordings, questions and observations on WhatsApp to 087 708 7031.
You can also visit the website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. But we do want to encourage you to send us your observations, questions and wildlife recordings by using our designated WhatsApp number. It is, you've just heard it there, 087 708 7031. Go to the website, all the details are there if you can't get the number down quick enough. We've got a very busy programme ahead of us today and we're looking forward to speaking with you again. Niall Hatch is in studio with me. Aina Nealana is in County Clare. Richard Collins is out there in Malahide. Terry Flanagan is down in Herbert Park and Dr. Matthew Jebb from the National Botanic Gardens will be joining us, about 6:15 or thereabouts. But Niall, can I start with you, if you don't mind? Because last night I was at home and I was watching TV, as you do. I was watching that movie Airplane. Remember the movie Airplane?
Oh,
it's one of my favourites. It's been on all week. It's fantastic.
What kind of plane is it? Oh, it's a big, pretty white plane with red stripes, curtains in the window and wheels, and it looks like a big Tylenol.
And as I was watching the movie, I thought I heard a bird singing, and I was wondering where it was coming from. So I went over to the chimney, and I stuck my microphone up the chimney.
Sounds like a blackbird.
And I said, it sounds like a blackbird. And it was. You could hear it singing very clearly. Then I thought I'll go outside and have a look.
I think I'll go outside and have a look and see if that bird is on my chimney. Or is it just nearby?
So I walked out and I can tell you I was wearing a lovely pair of shorts and my Crocs and a simple t-shirt. There it is, the blackbird singing.
Yep, right on top of the chimney cap. It's a blackbird.
So my question to you, Niall Hatch, is why did it choose the chimney cap in the first place? I know they want to get the highest point and all that. Was it because it was just the highest point, or was there a benefit to the kind of reverberation of the chimney itself? Because you could hear how loud it was, but it was inside the chimney when I had my mobile phone stuck up the chimney.
Oh, maybe it just wants to get on the radio. Maybe that's what the motivation was. No, I think that it must have started obviously because it's the highest point, because the blackbird couldn't have known in advance before it started this behaviour that it would get a benefit from singing in that location. So they like to go to a high perch. They can broadcast then over a wider range. So obviously it must have started by singing from a high point, but then it would have probably realised there was a benefit to this, because all of a sudden its own voice would have sounded richer and more amplified because it was being amplified by the cavity in the chimney. And therefore that bird would probably use that now as a favourite perch. So I hope you don't mind being disturbed by blackbirds when you're watching old comedy films, because it'll probably happen again and again. This blackbird has learned that this is the great spot to go to for its dusk chorus. So it's really interesting to hear it. It's amazing how clear that was as well, that you could hear that loudly down in your living room.
It was extraordinary. It really was. I was watching the movie and I could hear the sound and I thought, where's that? It's coming from the fireplace. It is. Has this bird missed its opportunity? It's singing very late.
Well, it is. It should be on its second brood now if it has successfully mated. So there is still territory to be defended. It is still putting rival males on notice that this is its patch. They're not welcome. There's obviously a first brood of juvenile blackbirds out now. Not its own blackbird chicks, but also ones from the neighbours as well. And it doesn't want them in its garden too, competing with its own chicks for food. So from that point of view, it might be warning them off. So it is quite normal for blackbirds to still sing at this time. But in the next few weeks, that'll definitely die down and eventually disappear. Once the second brood of chicks is out and about, then the blackbird male will be onto other things. We've got other concerns.
All right, let's say hello now to Aina Nealana, who's in County Clare. How's the weather in County Clare today, Aina?
The weather is glorious in County Clare. It's like a different country. But your remarks about the blackbird coming to your chimney pot, you're not with it at all. John Drinkwater, who was a poet in Britain way back 100 years ago, wrote a whole poem about this. And he said, "He comes on chosen evenings, my blackbird bountiful, and sings over the gardens of the town just as the hour the sun goes down." And the poem goes on about how beautiful the blackbird sounds. And at the end he says, "Figured above our garden plots, those are celestial chimney pots." So he was so impressed by the blackbird on the chimney that he wrote a whole poem about it, Derek. Are you moved to poetry yourself?
Richard, any birds singing on your chimney pots?
Not at the moment, Derek, but they do sometimes. I have some jackdaws nesting about
10 metres from there on the house next door, and I have house sparrows, but it's very interesting.
It is very interesting. Now, I observed something else the other day, and it has to do with the way birds walk. This is one for you, Richard, because you said to me before that when it comes to the corvids, the crow family, it requires a great deal more brain power to walk than it does to hop. So I went along to the River Dodder to have a look at a crow, because I see crows along the River Dodder at a particular point all the time when I'm walking up and down there just past Bald's Bridge. Have a listen to this.
I'm looking at a hooded crow. Now, this bird cannot be mistaken for any other member of the corvid family, because it's got a black head, a black hood, black wings, black tail, black legs, and the rest of its body is kind of an ashy grey colour. And it's just here on the River Dodder. Well, I should say it's on a bit of a sandbank on the River Dodder, where the water level is quite low and it's running either side of the sandbank. And it's full of stones and sand and vegetation. And there's even some old red bricks, probably from a refurbishment job on one of the cottages there in Dodder View. But the reason I'm here is to follow this crow. There's always crows here. I see them all the time. And this fella is just sauntering along. He's not in any hurry. It's like left, right, left, right, left, right. That's the pace of it. It's not in a hurry anywhere. And I know that yoga lovers will already know this. There's an exercise or position, however you describe it in yoga, which is called the crow walk. You get into the squat position, rest your hands on your knees, and then you walk around the floor. Left, right, left, right, left, right. And that's the pace. Now, this bird is here obviously looking for food. I wonder, is it fishing? Because I've heard that some crows do actually fish. And I know they eat mollusks and crabs and mussels and you name it. They pick them up, fly up into the air, drop them down, break them open and get at the meat. But this guy's just walking along casually. I'll put the video on the website so you can see it. With its mouth open. Now, it is kind of warm today. It's not so cold. All that rain is gone. So that's the hooded crow. It could have been any crow. I just picked this one because it was here. And its name in Irish is Carroglia, the grey crow.
The grey crow. Apologies for the poor recording. I was using my mobile phone, and that's what we want you to do, is to use your mobile phone to make recordings, send us in messages and questions, and then WhatsApp to 087 708 7031. It's really simple. Just make the recording and send it to us via WhatsApp. So back to the question, Richard College. You said that the birds that walk have greater brain power than the birds that hop. Is it true?
Well now, Derek, I suggest an experiment. When you leave the studio, don't walk to your car. Hop, hop to your car.
I can't hop, hop. I've got a dodgy back.
Well, let's suppose you were a normal person qualified to hop. But if you did, what would you find? You would find that you were exhausted in no time. You wouldn't be able to hop all the way home. It would be impossible. Now, what's going on? The energy that you use jumping up becomes gravitational energy, potential energy, and then you fall back down again. And when you fall back to the ground, you make noise. You disturb the ground. A shockwave runs off through the ground. So the energy out of your muscles that went to lifting you up in the hop now ends up dissipated in the ground. So you lose all the energy. Now, consider a trampoline with children jumping up and down on the trampoline. When they come down, the energy goes into elasticity and fires them back up again. And that's, for instance, what kangaroos do. Kangaroos are the great hoppers among the mammals. But the kangaroo has a long tendon. And when he lands from a hop, the tendon stretches and it holds the gravitational energy of the hop and he can reuse it. So it's a very effective solution to the problem. Now the birds therefore would be better off walking than hopping. If you're up in a tree flitting from branch to branch, yes, you just jump from this branch to the next. Walking is no use to you in a tree. But if you're on the ground like crows and starlings and things a lot, then left, right is the way to go. Now, does it demand a greater effort? It does. Remember what you have to do. You can't just hop along. That's effortless. You can hop if your legs were tied together, and you would hop if you were in a sack race.
Yeah.
But if you want to walk, what you have to do, that child, watch the child at the very young age when he starts to walk at first, he puts the leg out, then he's got to learn to shift the balance, the center of gravity over the leg, then lift up the other leg, put that out, shift the center of gravity back there. It's quite a complex operation, a higher order obligation. But that, I think, is what is dictated there.
Yes, it is interesting to see the difference between the birds that hop and the birds that walk. And there are very few that do both, actually. It's usually either or. It's not obviously something that most birds are consciously doing. But we
blackbirds.
Blackbirds mostly.
Speaking of which, yeah, walk and hop.
They walk and hop, but it's mostly hopping. That's the default mechanism. So I think what happens when they're walking, it takes more deliberate concentration. Now, hopping is very good if you want to spring into the air quickly to avoid a predator. It's very efficient that way. A lot of birds that would be spending most of their time in trees tend to hop because it's a very efficient way to get off the branch. You get that spring from the branch. However, if you're carefully searching for food on the ground, if you get the majority of your food from the ground, you're going to be more deliberate in the way you walk. You want to be able to take your time. You want to be able to make more subtle movements, I suppose, to exploit the food. That's very much what crows do. When you see them walking, they have this waddle to them. You see the sort of the rear end shifting from side to side. But if you watch their heads stay very fixed. They're keeping their gaze in a very fixed position, and they're very good at doing that. You see other birds like pigeons, they have a very distinctive way of walking. They bob their heads back and forth, and there's quite a few birds that do that. Chickens do it as well. And if you notice, what they're doing there is they're often holding their head fixed in a position even when their body is walking. So they're kind of catching up with their heads. But also it's thought to increase their depth perception because they have quite a narrow field of view in terms of the overlap in the front. They have a wide field of view around the sides, but the actual overlap, so they can see three dimensions, it's very narrow. So they're not very good at judging depth. But if they bob their heads back and forth, it gives them more frame of reference to see where objects actually are. So that's one of the theories behind why birds bob their heads when they walk.
All right, Aina.
Yes, I was just saying jackdaws and rooks can both walk and hop. I used to have children in school looking out the window and observing how they moved. But at least they all go front ways. Imagine if you were a poor crab and you could only walk sideways. Now that would be shkelele altogether. And crabs can only walk sideways. And this is because their knees are at the wrong angle. Our knees, when we walk, they go out in front of us. And then we have hips that can move our legs anyway. So we can walk front ways and back ways and sideways and every other way. But the crab's legs are fixed to its body and its knees are outward, so the crab can only walk sideways. And in fact, if you're a lobster, you can walk backwards into a trap and then you can't get out again. So, you know, walking forwards is something that we think, well, everybody moves forward, but not all the creatures in the world move forwards. So imagine if you were condemned, Derek, to only moving sideways because your knees were like that. How would you even say your rosary or kneel down or anything?
How would you keep a career on the road? Anyway, Niall, what about the pied wagtail now? So the pied wagtail walks occasionally, but it always seems to be running. No, walking very fast.
It kind of scurries.
But it scurries, yeah, I was about to say. It scurries.
It reminds me of a little clockwork toy. Like, it looks like someone just wound it up and let it go.
Yeah.
And off it goes. And that's, again, a bird that spends most of its time on the ground, especially when it's foraging. They do sleep up in the trees and they can perch in trees, but they spend most of their time on the ground. And it's a very deliberate way in which they walk to try and find food. But they do always seem to be in a hurry. Very often they'll even run away rather than fly away if danger is threatening them. It's only if something was to run at them or pounce that they would actually take flight. And when they fly, they can fly very well. But they're a great example of a bird that scurries along the ground. Other birds like larks and pipits, they do the same thing as well.
Let's say hello to Terry Flanagan, who's our man on the ground with his eye on nature. Terry, where are you today?
Well, I'm on the River Dodder, very close to where you were during the week. The Dodder, it's one of many rivers in Dublin, but believe it or not, it's one of the very few rivers that's above ground. I know people think of the Liffey, it runs through the centre of the city, and the Talca's on the north side, and the Poddle's in the city centre, the Camac out in Clondalkin, where I used to work. But the majority of rivers, they actually flow below ground. Anyway, I'm on the Dodder River Walk, and that's most definitely above ground. I'm between Ballsbridge and the Aviva, close to the Dodder View Cottages and Marian College, and I'm following the flow of the river as it's travelling northwards. Now, across the river from me at the moment is the distinctive swastika chimney, that's left of the famous swastika laundry that was established about 100 years ago. Now, did I dream this, Derek, or did you once tell me that your dad actually worked there?
My father worked there for 25 years.
really.
And if I'm not mistaken, was given a gold watch when he retired, which was no longer gold after a month or two. But he did. He worked there. And there was a big swastika on the top of the chimney. And it said in big white letters running vertically down the chimney, "Swastika Laundry." And the vans used to run around. During the Second World War, there were vans on the road in Ireland. It must have been an odd sight for some people. It was a symbol of good luck and peace, as I understand it, back in the day.
An ancient symbol from Eastern religions and philosophies, absolutely. Mm.
Yeah, the chimney is still here, but the swastika's gone, all right. I think the chimney is actually preserved. And I remember they were famous for those electric vans. Do you remember those? I remember them in the 60s going around the city, the red vans with the white swastika on it. Anyway, you were talking earlier about movement in wagtails and how they walk.
Yes.
Well, we've got grey wagtails here, and I'm watching their movement in three dimensions, no less. They feed exclusively on aquatic insects, and there's a myriad of midges here today. And what they're doing is they're walking along the ground, picking up little bits and pieces of whatever they can, and then darting up into the air and catching the insects and dropping back down to the ground again. Now, that may sound easy enough to do, but really, because their movement is in 3D, and Niall kind of touched on it there earlier on, they have to have what's referred to as stereoscopic vision. They actually see in stereo. Most people think of stereo as what you hear, but you can see in stereo. And for that, you need to have your two eyes facing forward, so you get a kind of a double image. The old saying, eyes to the front, likes to hunt. Eyes to the side, likes to hide. That tells us whether an animal is a predator or a prey animal. And really, when I was trying to explain this to kids in school, I always thought of Gordon Banks. Gordon Banks was a famous goalkeeper. He played for England in the World Cup final in 1966. He played again in 1970. He was at the top of his game. And the following year, or maybe 2 years later, 71 or 72, he was involved in a car accident and he lost an eye. Now, as soon as he lost an eye, he had to give up the game. And people couldn't understand that. They'd say, but sure, look, all you have to do is move your head a little bit more left or right and you can still see everything. Yeah, he could see where the ball was, but he couldn't see where exactly it was. He could see the ball, but he couldn't see exactly where it was. So that he goes to close his hand and the ball's gone through his hands or it hasn't come there already. So it's the same idea with predators. They have to see in stereo. So these birds here, it's not only difficult for them to walk, but it's also very difficult for them to fly and to be able to catch insects.
But they're not feeding on the wing the entire time like swallows or swifts, are they? I mean, they're leaping off the ground, if you like, up into the air and try to catch something and then back down again. Isn't that the case,
yes,
or am I wrong?
No, you're dead right. But I'm watching them here this afternoon for the last half hour or so. And there's a ton of midges here. And you can see them in the sunlight. They're taking more insects on the wing than they're taking on the stones around them. So they are, I would say 90% of the insects that they're taking in the last half hour here, they've been taking them on the wing. Now, they're very, very small, so they're going to expend a lot of energy, so they don't want to get it wrong. I know there's a fair bit of protein in the insects, but they have to eat quite a lot of them. So they're very successful. I know when you take leopards and tigers and cheetahs and things like that, they generally only have one kill in every 10 or so. These guys here, they're getting it much more than that.
Anything else of note there, Terry?
Well, I'm also watching the mallard. I know you spoke last week about sexual dimorphism.
We did.
The male and the female look totally different. It's quite easy to tell them apart. Well, there's plenty of mallard down here, and it's very easy to tell them apart, but the majority of them are males. And what's been happening, I've noticed here too, is that these males, they appear to harass the females, or they're forcing themselves on them. These females, they look like they're unattached females or those that have already lost a clutch. I know it's referred to as forced copulations and it may involve several males chasing a female and mating with her. Now, it's actually been suggested that these females, they elicit this behaviour themselves by flying over the territory of other males. Evolutionary biologists believe that the female mallards encourage these forced copulations to raise the odds of successful fertilisation. In other words, if they're only mating with one male, well, he might be an okay, his genes might be okay. But if there's other males there as well, maybe if she mates with them, so she'll have a kind of a mixture of this sperm. In other words, it increases the genetic diversity. They're really seeking better genes. So there's been quite a lot of that happening here over the last couple of weeks or so. And I know people have mentioned it to me and have mentioned it to you and to others on the show there as well.
I would have thought it was a bit late now, no?
Well, ducks are very opportunistic and they may have lost their clutches. And the males, of course, it's no real investment to them whether they mate or not with a female. So they'll try it any time that they can. The female is much more selective. So there's times that she wants to avoid the males completely. And normally a female that has ducklings at the moment would want to avoid the males. So it could be if a female is flying over trying to attract the attentions of the males that she doesn't currently have a clutch. It is getting towards the end of the breeding season, although ducks do have quite a wide breeding season. Now, what's interesting there, of course, is that when you have a whole load of males competing for the female, the one who is the fittest and the strongest and the most aggressive, he's the most likely to be able to win the competition between the males to mate with her. So from that point of view, any offspring that she has, particularly male offspring, there's a good chance that they will inherit that aggression and that successful mating capacity, and therefore that her genes will be passed on to the next generation through her sons. So this is something really interesting that happened. It seems very brutal and very aggressive, but there's an advantage to the female here as well, strange as that may seem. Now, one of the things that we're seeing every year, we get lots of calls into the program, I know, from people who think that all the male ducks disappear later in the summer. So at the moment, there are lots of males around, but from sort of July and August, that kind of time, people think that the males completely disappear. You don't see them with their green heads and their curly tail feathers. You just see the females around the place. But actually what happens is the males go into drag, essentially. They change into female-style plumage, and that's sort of a camouflage that they have at that stage. Because ducks have a very weird molting strategy. All birds molt their feathers. They have to replace them. Most birds, what they do is they molt one flight feather on each wing, and that gets replaced before the next one falls out. For some reason, ducks have evolved to lose all their flight feathers simultaneously, which means that for a small, short period of time in the late summer, they become completely flightless. And all of a sudden, that flashy male plumage, very gaudy, very colourful.
It's gone.
Yeah, because it would be a liability. They'd be very obvious to predators when they can't escape. When the male can fly, he can look as flashy as he wants because he can get away from the fox or the cat. But when he's flightless, he can't. So he goes into plumage that very closely resembles that of the female, very, very brown. The way you can tell the difference, though, he keeps his yellow beak. So the female has an orange and brown beak, and the male has a yellow beak, and he keeps that all year.
You know the old saying, if it looks like a duck, swims like a duck, and quacks like a duck, then it is probably a duck. Where does all that come from? Because everybody can identify a duck, even if we don't know what kind of duck it is. How do we even know it's a duck?
Well, I think it is one of the most familiar birds. At least some of the ducks are. We're often talking about the mallard. Everyone knows that that's a duck, and that's the one that mainly quacks. In fact, there are over 25 different species of duck regularly seen in Ireland, some very common, some very rare. Very few of those quack. The mallard quacks, the gadwall quacks, but the other ducks, they whistle and they snort. They make all these different kinds of noises. Oh. We've heard the noise that eiders make. Remember what documentary did of those? Make that mooing sound. And it's very distinctive sound that they make. So it's very few duck species that actually quack. And there's quite a few duck species, I think, that may not quite look like ducks to people. If you look like birds like red-breasted mergansers or gooseanders, these are members of the saw-billed duck group. They don't have the big flat duck beak we all associate with ducks. They have pointed, narrow beaks with little teeth along the edge, or pseudo-teeth. It's serrations on the edge that look like saws. And they don't immediately look like ducks, at least in terms of their beak shape. So I think, though, that this expression came from the fact that for the mallard, the one we're all familiar with around our towns and our cities and our duck ponds, it's a very instantly identifiable bird. Even small toddlers can identify that immediately as a duck.
That's a duck, they say. That's a duck, ain't it?
Yeah, and of course, farmyard ducks they quack, obviously, and people had flocks of ducks more frequently than they do now. And of course, they're very closely related to the mallard, and mallards can actually breed with farmyard ducks, and you get queer-looking feathers on them sometimes indeed. But I'm amused at the males, the big manly males ganging up on the poor female and four or five of them chasing her. Oh, they're all men together now. But when July and August comes, oh, now they've taken off their male clothes and they're pretending to be women because they're afraid they'll be eaten by cats. What kind of a crowd are ducks?
Terry, thank you very much indeed. You can go home now.
Okay, cheers, Derek.
Talk to you later on. Don't forget you can contact us by email. You can email mooney@rte.ie. You can send a text message to 51551, or you can send a WhatsApp observation to 087-708-7031.
Email mooney@rte.ie.